On this edition of the Car Jam podcast.
Spirito di punto.
Spirito di punto. It's not perfection. If you're after perfection and dullness, just get yourself a BMW.
I've always been interested in trying that. You see all these programs about you start off with like a Volkswagen Beetle and you work your way up to an Aston. I always fancied the idea of starting with a brand new Bentley and then ending up in some real wreck.
GTV and Spider of the 90s. Mwah. Brera.
Hello there, and welcome back to Car Chum. Even if I do say so myself, you've made a very good choice tuning in this week. Former Alpha PR manager Angie Voluti joins me and my Car Chum Mike to talk about her love of Audis. Alphas.
Comb your hair and get out the best china. We have a guest. Now, what we normally do on Car Chum is we get the guest to introduce herself or himself. So we have Angie Voluti. Am I correct in pronouncing?
No, you're not.
Voluti,
no.
Surely.
Voluti, of course.
There you go, you see. Already I've disgraced myself.
Do you know Voluti means wanted in Italian?
Yes.
Yeah, it could be interpreted both ways.
So, Angie, in sort of one sentence or more, would you sort of describe who you are, what you do, please?
No, I cannot. Not in one sentence.
Okay, it's going to be quite a quick interview then. just give us an idea of your interest in cars, your career, etc.
I am an Alfa Romeo fan. I have been lucky enough to work in the car industry since she basically left her a country of origin, which is Italy. And I hasten to say I'm British now, okay? I've got a British passport. And I tried to forget I was ever Italian, unless it comes to cars. Alfa Romeo has been my first love. It's always been my only love. I even named my children after Alfa Romeo. So that's
you named one after a race, didn't you? After a car race.
Well, actually, and the race driver as well. Because he's called Florio, like Targa Florio. He's also called Tazio. That's his second name, like Tazio Nuvolari.
See, now that is commitment to being a car fan.
I'm going to need some education there on that second bit.
I don't understand this, because I thought everybody would know about Tazio Nuvolari, one of the most famous racing drivers of the 20s. He was so good, he would just race a car through two petrol stations where there would be like a couple of inches in between the two sides and go absolutely straight through. You don't get this sort of thing with, cars so they don't help you anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that is proper.
Was he primarily an Alfa Romeo driver?
Yes, he was primarily Alfa Romeo. Yes. And also Tazio sounds nice.
So what is it about Alfa Romeo that appeals so strongly?
Unless you've driven one, it is very hard to explain. But once you do, you are converted. It's not perfection. If you're after perfection and dullness, just get yourself a BMW. I never said that. However,
wait a minute.
Talk to you. That will make sure that you understand what's underneath your bottom, then get yourself a proper Alfa Romeo.
I don't always want to know that.
There are Alphas I don't like very much. I think that the Mito looks like a little piglet, and I really don't like it. And the Giulietta is nice. But like a Ford Focus would be nice.
Okay.
Just an effective segment C car.
Giulietta, I had as a press car when they first came out.
Yes.
Dull. Because I need a bit of selling on this.
No, you don't need any selling. It's not right.
It had three suspension settings, which I've now forgotten. It had
DNA? Contraction.
DNA, that's it.
Yeah.
And I think that it was one of those irritations where none of the settings was quite right. In other words, it changed its characteristics of X, Y, and Z as they do. But I wanted a bit from X and a bit from Y, and you couldn't do that. And the other thing was, when you turned it off, it automatically went back to its default.
Yes.
So every time you got in it, you had to switch it into D for dynamic or whatever it was you'd chosen. And I thought, just little things like that. I thought, if I lived with this, this would, you know, drive me mad. Is that fair or unfair?
No, not at all unfair. And I think Mito had the same issues.
Right.
I always thought it was a bit of a gimmick anyway. DNA. Only the Italians would come up with that kind of thing. It's I very nearly said a swear word. Such BFs.
Do I say? Oh, let's learn something. Do I say Lancia or Lancia? I never know.
Do you want to be my friend?
Well, I want to be, but I don't know whether you want to be. We'll decide that at the end.
Okay, you say Lancia, you're my friend. You say Lancia, I'll come and throttle you.
Well, that's fairly conclusive, isn't it? So it's a Lancia. So all these years and all these people in the UK and anglicised places have got it wrong.
Well, and they know they got it wrong. Because when I say, well, it's actually Lancia, they say, we are in the UK here. We say it how we want it. Okay.
Yeah, can I use that excuse?
The same people who then spell alpha with a PH.
Anyway, there was a reason for me saying Lancia, and that's on those contractions. Do you remember the Lancia HPE estate?
Right.
Mm. And what did the HPE stand for 10 points?
High performance.
Yeah, estate. Yeah. And I only know that because I did it in a crossword about 4 a.m.
You really asked me that question?
Yeah, it was good, wasn't it? Did you enjoy it? Welcome to Car Chum.
Look, mate, you can ask me questions about, I don't know, makeup and hairdresser. You know, I haven't been to the hairdresser for so many years. My hair is still pre-COVID. I don't care.
Really?
Yeah. That's why I look like Hagrid.
Think of the savings.
I don't care. I just don't like hairdressers.
No,
listeners who are not.
Oh, I saw the top. I am actually with you there on hairdressers. Although I've got a good guy at the moment who I get on well with. He's a little bit far right. I don't know what it is, but he's interesting to talk to at least.
Exactly.
I don't have to talk about holidays.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that.
He's intelligent. He's far right. Yeah. Whilst I get the, hey, where are you going on holiday this year?
Yes. Mike, drag
anyway,
this back quickly.
Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, did I mention that my opinions are usually pretty controversial and nobody likes me?
Right, I'll put that in the intro.
I find that hard to believe.
It's true, it's absolutely.
So let's sort of go back to the beginning, as it were. So you grew up in Sicily,
mm-hmm.
Correct?
Yeah.
And I've seen on a few of your older blogs, you certainly owned Alfa Romeos back then. What was sort of some of the nicer cars that you owned, or the memorable cars that you owned?
A banana coloured Alfa 33.
Oh, nice. Like a 33.
Mm.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen one in yellow.
Quite forgiving. Well, it's a sort of a light yellow, primrose rather than banana. And okay. It was quite forgiving for somebody who was learning to drive at the time. Mm. And it was also, it said, you know, you're not going for a little Cinquecento there. You are aiming for a little more than that. But my then boyfriend had a 3 Series BMW, and I hated both the car and him. So it didn't last very long.
Was the 33? The 33 was front wheel drive, wasn't it? It was the 75, the larger one that was rear. Is that
that's
right?
That's why I'm saying it was forgiving for somebody who was learning to drive. It's definitely more forgiving. Yes.
Do you have a preference for front or rear wheel drive, or does that just depend on the car?
Actually, I don't. Oh. No, I just think that this is, again, I used to be the Alfa Romeo PR manager, and the arguments that I had with the media were incredible. Now, there are media who know that they're talking about, so the arguments would be lively. It would be, yes, I appreciate their point of view in terms of rear-wheel drive and all the purity, yes, okay. But I still think that I want to predict where the car is going. Also maybe by the time I was starting to drive, front-wheel drive was becoming more popular. So it is also a question of, you know, decades you were born. And at the time, I was the youngest senior manager in the Fiat group.
Oh.
So compared to some of the media, I was younger. And therefore, for me, front-wheel drive was not a swear word. It was just what I was growing up with.
I don't find it so either, Angie. To be honest with you, I think it depends totally on the car. The one that I would like, and this has got nothing to do with Italian, but actually, is there an Italian example of this, actually? Something that was both?
Both?
Front-wheel drive.
You mean four-wheel drive?
No. Tony, you've just invented something new. There's a model that I'm thinking Rover 7.
A quick moment while Tony Googles front and rear-wheel drive just to familiarise himself what they mean.
Rover 75, front-wheel drive. With the V6 and the four-cylinder, when they dumped the asthmatic Mustang engine in it, they converted it to a rear-wheel drive platform. Is there an Italian example of that?
159.
159?
Well, yeah, because you have a front-wheel version and you have a no-wheel version.
Well.
You have a what?
All-wheel.
Four-wheel drive.
All right, I'll give you
but
that.
I'll be honest, the only other example I can think of was Triumph's Dolomite, wasn't it? Where that went.
Oh, good, yeah, very good.
Front to rear.
Well, it's.
How many people know about the Dolomite and how many people know about Alphas?
Well, I probably know more about the Dolomite, actually. We're not making friends,
yeah,
are
but
we?
You are also calling Lancia.
No, I didn't. No. I wanted it cleared up. It was purely for the audience benefit.
Get him, Mike, Angie. Get him.
And Mike, because Mike mispronounces everything, including your name, within the first two lines.
That is very true. That's very true. But he won't make that mistake again.
I've never made any secret of it either. If you listen to any of the shows, at some point there is me going, I'm murdering this, but, and particularly French. So it's a joy now to be able to murder the Italian language as well.
I'll tell you that, but I can pronounce your surname, Mike.
Yeah. Well, most people can't.
Really?
Well, most people can't spell it.
Renault.
Renault.
That's the wrong way round, though, because it'd be Renault.
Do you remember when you used to have a profile picture of the Renault badge with your finger on the L?
Over the L, because my name is spelled without the L, and everybody puts the L in, and then go, oh, your emails are bouncing back. It's probably because you can't read. But anyway.
So we got to Alpha 33, then the boyfriend with the BMW, and we don't like the BMW, and we don't like the boyfriend, and then we stopped.
I had a Fiat Punto for a long time, and the reason I had a Fiat Punto was because beggars can't be choosers, and I moved here, and I was very young, just after university, and my old auntie came to visit in the Fiat Punto and left it here.
Hmm. Well, by accident?
No, she couldn't be bothered to drive it back. So she just got herself on a train and went back to Italy. So I was left with this Fiat Punto. And I just drove it for a while. That Fiat Punto saw some interesting things. My auntie, when she came to visit, used to go around the roundabouts the wrong way. and when I was screaming in terror in the car, she used to say, so what? You know, they can see me because the Fiat Punto was yellow. So it was bright yellow. Yes, you can see, but oh, the police can see you.
So presumably it was still on Italian number plates as well, wasn't
it? It was, and at the time it didn't really matter that much. So I drove it with Italian plates for years. And then I took it back.
I just ignored speed cameras and things like that, I would
absolutely
imagine.
Yeah,
yes, okay.
Absolutely.
Spirito di punto.
Spirito di punto. You remember? Oh, my God, you must be older than you look.
Well, you know, one doesn't like to show off. Yeah, Spirito di punto.
Wow, that was so impressed.
And the accent as well. What do you think?
Very good. Yes.
Yeah. So you see, so the whole Lancia thing was, you know.
Well,
yes,
well done, Tony. You're dragging it back. You're getting brownie points. Well done.
The punto went because I wrote a letter at the time to the Fiat marketing director. Here in the UK, and I said I have absolutely no experience in the car industry, but I do like cars. Well, I said it in a better way. And I got a job interview straight away because they were looking for a marketing analyst. Mm-hmm. What I didn't say in my speculative letter was that I can't do numbers at all. I mean, numbers and I are not very good friends. I can't do numbers. And it was pretty apparent straight away that I couldn't do numbers, even in the job interview. However, I was wearing a short skirt with suspender belts. And in 1995, I had absolutely no qualms whatsoever about showing what I could. And I got a job. And years later, when I had proved myself and I was doing really well, as I said, I became the youngest senior manager on what I was doing, not on the length of my skirts. The marketing director confessed that he went to the human resources director and said, she can't do this, you know. She literally hasn't got any experience whatsoever. And the human resources director said, yeah, she's cheap though, don't worry.
Oh.
So you see, I'm absolutely honest. I'm not denying this at all. They paid me very little money.
This is excellent, solid career advice from Car Chum.
I'm certainly learning from my next interview.
Suspenders, a short skirt. Accept a job that pays you less than your male counterparts by a long margin, and then make your way into the car industry. Yes. Well,
funnily enough, I did try that interview and it didn't work and I didn't get the job.
What, the suspenders?
Yeah, the suspenders and the short skirt, yeah. Funnily enough. Just ahead of my time, I think.
I was quite pretty at the time. It worked.
What is on your wall behind you?
On my wall, I have probably my most prized possessions. They are both drawings by Walter De Silva, who was the head of design for Alfa Romeo when I was Alfa Romeo manager.
Wow.
And they were drawn for me, especially that one. As you can see, so it was 932, 936 times. So 156, 166.
Mm-hmm.
And he drew it for me just in front of me in literally 5 minutes. And then I took it with me.
Wow. That's amazing.
I love it. And did you see that? Look at the history of the badge as well. I got one that shows you all the badges.
Yeah.
And as the badge has evolved over the decades for Alfa Romeo, there is always the snake, there is always the cross. Because that's part of the history, but it definitely gets more stylized. I don't think there is much difference between what it was 50 years ago, 60 years ago, and now, frankly. And why should there be? It's a very classy badge, don't you think? Better than four rings, really.
a lot of the very successful badges haven't changed a great deal. Citroën's just changed theirs. Have you seen that? Citroën have been through a big big rebrand recently. It's still the chevrons, but it's much more modern. I don't know. I've seen it a couple of times. I thought, it has grabbed me a little bit, but it doesn't quite say Citroën in the way that it used to. Do you know what I mean? But I guess that's just
because you need to be exposed to it long enough, and then we'll just get used to it.
Yeah.
But as badges go, Alfa Romeo is a very pretty one, definitely. Yeah. I think Rover has a very pretty badge, don't you think?
Well, the Viking.
The Viking.
Yes. I can't remember why you're the Viking. Do you?
I really ought to know because I've got a Rover.
Exactly.
I know, but I just can't remember.
We'll edit that in.
Yeah.
Okay. You were about to ask me about the snake. The snake is a symbol of resurrection. The snake eats a baby that then gets vomited out again. So it's the cycle of life.
Oh.
And it's also the symbol of one of the most powerful families in Italy, the Sforza.
What did they have to do with it?
It's the region in Italy where Alfa Romeo was born.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, Sforza family.
Now, I remember you saying in the past, and I think I may well have read this online as well, that you wrote about cars being primarily marketed at men, and that women were obviously buyers of cars and enthusiasts, but the marketing wasn't ever really aimed at women.
What year was that when I wrote that?
That was, I think, about 2010. So yeah, do you changed. Think... Yeah. Do you think the situation has improved?
Improved?
Yeah.
I think the situation has changed. We no longer have men and women, for a start, and things have become so much more fluid that marketing had to change its language. Mm. I would say that, you know, I'm on several social platforms, so from professional ones like LinkedIn to social ones like Facebook and maybe my local Seniors group. And I can tell you that whilst LinkedIn has some sort of cerebral masturbation about how we should talk to women and how we buy half of the cars and we're responsible for the choice of up to 80% of them, they still don't talk to us. Well, no, it's not true, actually. I mean, I can see in social media, a woman needing an MOT will know exactly what to do. She will not be fooled anymore. So all this business of, oh, I need to take a friend with me because otherwise they're going to give me a bill I wasn't expecting, blah, blah, blah. I don't think it happens anymore. I think we talk about problems or potential problems where none are there. And I think even the guys working on MOT stations and garages, they're probably sick of it. They're sick of getting this woman who arrives in a little Ford Focus and says, right, this is the MOT that I need done, but I'm watching you. Because that's the attitude that we have nowadays. So you can go the other way. And I don't really know how this can be solved because the chip on the shoulder is definitely there now. Women who don't want to be spoken to don't listen. It's as simple as that. I have friends who don't care. They say the white car, the red car. And why should that be shameful? I am not interested in tanks, okay? In, military tanks. My 21-year-old son, Romeo, he's very much into tanks. Now, that's his decision. I don't know any women who are interested in German tanks. I mean, I even asked him, why is he called the leper? And he said, no, it's not leper, you cretin. It's leopard, like the animal.
Leopard, yeah.
No, it's true, though, isn't it, man? It's not just a male-female thing, that, is it? Because, you know,
it isn't.
I've got plenty of friends. I've got plenty of friends who
lies.
I'm telling myself.
They say Lancia.
Probably.
They're all in the room today as well.
they wouldn't say Lancia at all because they wouldn't know what the hell a Lancia
exactly.
was. You know, and they're not interested. You cannot get them to be interested. Now, I don't understand that. I don't understand how you can't wake up in the morning and think about a car. Relatively quickly, and think of it to try and send yourself to sleep.
It's not just the women.
No, it's not.
It's not
exactly.
just the women. It's men and women. And I think there is this, because it's been going on for such a long time that we just assume that's still the case, and it isn't. There's nothing wrong in saying, I'm not interested in cars.
But do you know what? They must be talking to them, though, Angie. They must be, because one in particular I'm thinking of, every 3 years the lease runs out and goes and renews the Mercedes GLC blob SUV thing.
Right.
And gets all excited because, or, you know, for about 10 minutes because it's a different colour. And I said, but it's you've got the same thing again. I mean, A, don't you fancy a change? B, is that really the best car for you? You know, et cetera, et cetera. It doesn't make any difference because if you tried to show them a Mitsubishi or a Nissan or something, they would turn their noses right up at that. Whereas the GLC 220 diesel to them is everything that it says. Everything that they want it to. So that message is getting to them somehow.
Yeah, the message may be getting through to them by the car rather than the marketing. Because once you've been there with that car for so many years, surely campaigns will have gone one after the other, and the message will have changed. And mm-hmm. they still go for the same car. That's because it's their experience that matters, surely.
Yeah. Do you, talking of that, do you ever go back? I have a rule, which I've broken a few times, but never to go back. In other words, don't try and repeat the joy you had with a car 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, because you won't enjoy it as much a second time. Have you ever had the same car twice with a gap?
You mean like going back to an ex-boyfriend? It doesn't work. It doesn't. No.
What about you, Mike? Have you ever returned?
What, car or girlfriend?
Don't care. No, either. I'm just filling airtime.
No, with the car. I suppose, I mean, if you can count the car being off-road for 6 years because I haven't done anything with it and then got it back on the road, yes.
Well, that's like your boyfriend being not in a coma. That's not because he left.
And then, then you've got 6 years of catching up to do, answering a lot of questions about what happened.
Yes.
No, I've never actually owned... There is. I've never owned an example of the same car twice.
Okay.
But that's normally just because I've not found another one, because I buy my cars so cheaply that 6 or 7 years later, I think, well, I'm not paying three times as much for the same car. So I tend to just...
Yeah, but your car will have gone up as well.
Yes, it's the housing market argument, isn't it? You know, as long as you're on the ladder, it doesn't much matter whether it's going up or down, does it? You know, it's.
But then you say that I've never made a profit on a car, and I don't just mean the amount of money that I've put into it. I mean, I've never bought. I bought a Triumph for £500 that I sold for £500.
Well, that's a win.
And that was actually because it was a very pretty girl, and I forgot to ask for more. But. Otherwise, I've always sold a car for less or it's gone for scrap. I've never actually... That's the one time I broke even on a car deal.
That reminds me of something that somebody once said to me about investment and how to become rich. And he absolutely meant it. He said, it's very easy to make money out of the property investment industry. All you need to do is start with two flats in Knightsbridge. And he meant it, and you know, I see his point. So, you know, if you start with NGB, that's unlikely. Maybe if you started with a DB24.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and work your way down. I've always been interested in trying that. You see all these programs about you start off with like a Volkswagen Beetle and you work your way up to an Aston. I always fancied the idea of starting with a brand new Bentley and then ending up in some real wreck at the end because you've made bad deals all the way through, and you sort of end up with just something like a Lada.
Think of the fun in restoring the cars. Think of all the nice problems you have first thing in the morning, thinking, how am I going to finance the latest restoration project? Having said that, you know, I had an idea. I had an idea, and it's still sitting with me, although I've already switched on a Twitter account about it. Mm. Only car fans.
Okay. Now, interesting.
Think about it. What did Marshall McLuhan say about cars? A car is a mechanical bride. There is definitely a connotation of the car as a sexual object when it comes to men, because let's face it, they want it pretty and they want it to do what they want them to, it to do. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
So, classic car that requires maintenance, restoration, you know, anything money spent on it, if they don't have the money, there will always be somebody with more money willing to watch whilst the restoration takes place. I want to write the copy about this, you know. And then my, I don't know, maybe my carburetors just spoke to you, called you from outside the garage, and there I was, bonnet wide open, ready.
£50 to fill my dashpot on my HS2 carburetor.
Yeah. No. Think about it. I want to start this, and I wanted to, I mean, not that I've ever been on OnlyFans, but I know how it works. So you just become a member, you choose your restoration project, and then you make a donation, and you watch. Hey, maybe the owner might even let you have a go once it's finished.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
That enters a whole different zone, doesn't it, of comparisons, but yeah.
Yeah, I think there's so many things that I know as soon as I say them, I'll see Tony wince. So I'm holding back. But no, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
Writing that copy would be amazing. I mean, come on, it'd be so much fun. Think of all the double entendre. Mm-hmm. Think of innuendos. Yes. Think of the tongue in cheek itself, an innuendo.
So there is a Twitter account.
There is a Twitter account which I switched on just in case, you know, and then it's been sitting there because I need somebody to create the platform. But she's game; she wants to do it. So we just need to do something similar to this and meet up and discuss it, because she's a wizard when it comes to digital platforms. So I will do it.
Oh. Well, okay. I mean, you literally heard that first. On Car Chum.
You have heard it first. Then. Yeah. I haven't told anybody.
That is a reveal. A reveal.
Yeah. And do not steal the idea, okay? Besides, you can write a copy like I can, so it doesn't matter.
So what's on your driveway at the moment, if you look out the window?
No,
but that's part of the deal. Part of the contract you signed is that you have to pull back the neck curtain.
It's not my car. It's my son's car. He has absolutely no taste.
Tank.
He's a mean, mean, tight bastard. And no, sorry, I'm not saying, especially as until, what are we, January? Until October, I had 11 points on my driving license and therefore I couldn't really have anything. And now I've got...
Eight.
Eight. How do you know I got eight?
That was a bit creepy, wasn't it?
But Tony's levels of research go far beyond what normal people do.
Yeah, I've got 8 points on my driving license, and until I go back to, let's say, you know, just a little, fewer points. No, but I want a Giulia, and that is impossible. Oh,
okay. Can we have the Giulia conversation then? Because I'm not really an alpha person, and I understand what you're saying at the beginning about, you know, you drive it, you feel it, you love it. And I have driven quite a few, but I just have never connected. The one that I absolutely connect with, and I have never driven, but just visually, every time I see it, I can't see anything wrong with that Giulia. And it doesn't have to be the one with the
quadrifoglio.
Yeah, doesn't have to have the green. The green leaf on the back.
The green leaf. What do you think it is? Weed?
It's just a bit of grass. I don't know. Don't undermine my point. It can be the standard Veloce.
Yeah.
I've got one problem, though.
It's automatic.
What? Yes, precisely. But it's not everywhere. If you go the European models are allowed the manual in, but only in the four cylinder. No, there were some in the one with the grass on the back as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Manuals. But yeah. I think they stopped making them. But you can still get a manual secondhand in Europe.
Yes.
Left-hand drive, obviously.
Basically, I just don't want anything else.
It's no, like I agree.
A crash on a very handsome Henry Cavill. You know, once you have a crash on him, then nothing else matters. You just don't get a partner, do you?
Mm-hmm. I've never suffered that with him myself. But okay, pick your model and pick your colour of Giulia then, please.
Quadrifoglio in any colour. I don't really care for colour at all.
Okay, does it have to be the Quadrifoglio?
Well, it has in my dreams, yes. We're talking dreams here.
Well, I don't know, because the
do you know how much they are?
Yeah, I know how much they are. But the four cylinder ones you can get, you know, from teens now, can't you?
Yes. Well, sort of. I want one of those or?
Well, they still look lovely though. They've still got twin exhaust. No, they're just the single round ones. They've still got all the lines. They've got the nice sort of telly dial wheels still.
Those go back to 1996, you know that, yeah?
Really?
Yeah, with the GTV, the 3-litre.
Ah,
yes.
Okay, yeah. I get lost in all the coupes through that lineage, because there's GTV, there's Brera, there's
you want to know?
GT.
It's very simple. GTV and Spider of the 90s, mwah. Brera, mwah.
They had the crease kind of running up from the headlights right through the centre of the car at an angle.
No, that wasn't
that
the Brera.
GTV.
No, that's not
GTV.
But the Brera is not an Alfa, really. It's GM, isn't it? And it's fat.
Now, that's the
one.
Well,
I'm not allowed to say that, sorry. It's heavy.
Corpulent. That's the one with the separate
rotund.
Ample. Big U. Let's stop. It's with the individual. Just for the sake of the tape, Angie laughed then, but it wasn't audible.
Okay.
It's got the individual
objection,
headlights.
Objection, badgering the witness.
It's got the individual headlights and it's got the really boring looking dash and whatnot, the Brera, hasn't it?
Yeah, you do know that it's one lamp, yes, with the two. We're talking about the GTV now.
No, Brera.
The GTV has two lamps, four holes.
Mm.
Yeah?
Yes.
When you open the bonnet, the headlights stay in place.
Yeah.
Like so many Italian things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. yeah, deliberately. It was designed that way. It's not just an offshoot of rampant rust. No.
Anyway, can we just return? We didn't. No, but they didn't do that in the 90s and onwards.
No, they didn't. Actually.
No, they didn't. Do you remember?
You Mercedes.
Talked about advertising. The campaign for Alfa Romeo was the body is guaranteed for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And the soul is guaranteed for life.
Oh, that's nice.
Nice, isn't it?
I bet you wish you'd written that. Or did you write it?
No, I didn't write it, no. But, I would have said, I'm galvanised for 10 years, you know, to make it more personal. But, hey, that's me. Hmm. Occasionally, I do think maybe I could have an affair. But with whom, exactly? I mean, come on. Maybe Jaguar, you know, the British counterpart. I do like XK8s.
The Jaguar range at the moment, I think, is really appealing for what it is. I'm not saying that I particularly lust after it, but if you look, I think the XE, the little one, is very pretty. You know, nice looking car. The XF seems to have gotten smaller. I don't think it has, but it looks smaller, less bulky. Again, nice car. A lot of four cylinder going on, but that's the way of the world, isn't it? no XJ at the moment. There's going to be an electric one, isn't there? And their range of SUVs, love or loathe them. Again, they look sharp. No, but I walked down the road the other day and there was an F Pace sitting there in red.
Face looks nice, doesn't
it? Yeah, it's a nice car. Yes,
I know.
But they're not selling.
It reminds me of something I was told. So this is secondhand. And there would have been, again, in the 90s, my good friend and very, very well-known journalist, John Simister, was at a dinner with, it was a Jaguar launch, and I think he was sitting next to the CEO and asked about the S-Type. And the CEO looked around and said, S-Type, S-Type? We don't do those, do we? You know, pretending that they wanted to turn a page and do nothing else.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought it was quite an interesting one because, you see, even then I still liked those.
Yeah, I did.
And I've grown fonder with time, but that quite often happens, though, doesn't it?
But yeah, but Jaguar knew how much I liked them because they, when I was a marketing analyst, we're talking 1995 here, mm-hmm. I joined in the summer, and in the autumn they were launching to the dealers the brand new XK8. And I was invited to the dealer launch. And I still have pictures of me in this fantastic car that broke down within 2 miles. Nope. I mean, the automatic gearbox just gave up. And I sat there and I said, what do I do now? And they said, oh, just wait and 10 minutes will work again. And it did. And I thought,
oh, wow.
I loved that car and I still do.
They're good. They're decent value now, and you can get some. You can get, yeah, and you can get some post 2001 Euro compliant for you, Les. You have to get a late, you know, a revised one, but you can. You know, and X types as well. You know,
yes,
they have their moments for me when I see them. So yeah, no, go to Jaguar.
I had an X type.
Did you?
Yes, I gave it back when I split up with him. Yeah,
which E-type?
It was a proper one, 4.2. Series 1.
Series 1, 4.2. And Roadster or Coupe or what?
Well, it was born a Coupe and then became a Roadster.
Oh.
And I remember how much he paid for it, 25 at the time. Mm-hmm. We would have been in late 90s. And then he spent another £10,000 to do it up. Right. But it was my car. And when we split up, it didn't feel fair and moral to keep the car. Besides, I really did not like him, and I didn't want to be reminded every time I saw the car, so I gave it back.
That's fair enough.
Was he better or worse than the BMW?
Oh, better. Much better.
Okay.
Yeah, it was an interesting car to drive. Oh. It went like a tractor, yes. Very good. Maybe if it had been an Alfa Romeo, I would have hesitated a bit.
Morals, Alfa.
Yeah, morals, Alfa.
Senna, I've found, and because I only own older cars, and I generally only have an interest in older cars, you know, the new stuff... Yeah, every sort. Like you say with the Jag, new Jags, yes, I walk past the new Jag and I think, oh, that looks nice. But I don't particularly have that much desire to own a new car. I will always go for an older car and I will make exceptions for that car. So there is an element of you like a car enough, you will forgive it all its foibles. And as you say with the XK8, it broke down, but you're still thinking, I really like this car. So I will put up with quite a lot. I will be sat in a car for 3 hours waiting for recovery because something's broken down on it. But I will still love it. And I think that seems to be... Do we...
A prerequisite for Alfa ownership?
Well, I was
not
trying
really,
to find
actually. But are you trying to wind me up? It's not. It's just because, you know, BMWs break down even more, but nobody ever sees them because they get whisked away. Whilst Alfa Romeo sit there looking beautiful no matter what, and you notice them. You don't notice a BMW on the side of the motorway, do you?
Well, no, because there are normally quite a few of them because they're the 2-litre diesel and they've snapped their cam chain or whatever it is that's wrong with every single one of them they've ever made. So that's such a regular occurrence. Yeah, you don't stop seeing them.
Why is it? Okay, sweeping generalisation, but because I know this will annoy you, so I'm doing it deliberately. Why is it that virtually every Italian car manufacturer cannot put switches and gauges and things in normal places where you expect to find them. Why are they just like scattered across the dashboard? And particularly, maybe not so much in the newer ones.
They are creative people and their brains don't work in the same way as yours. You know, they want to have switches where the fingers will titivate.
Okay.
That's what it said in the brochure.
Exactly. That's what it said. I wrote the brochure. I was expecting you to say the usual thing, i.e., why is the steering wheel so far away and why are the pedals so close? You know, the usual.
Because of the long body, short legs, allegedly, wasn't it? It's always the stereotype of the Italian driver.
It's probably right. Long legs, I don't know. Okay. I'm the exception, obviously.
Can I wrestle you through some Italian brands that are related to our conversation to cars? Because this is just classic Google, this was, but I was amazed by the number of Italian engineering car E brands that there are. Right? Yeah. You're not going to be surprised, but just chime in if you've got something to say, like I've pronounced that incorrectly. But Mike, I think you're going to be surprised by something. So, all right, here's the first one. Abarth. Okay, fine. Alpha, April, how do you say it?
Aprilia.
Okay. Benelli.
Yeah.
Benelli motorbikes. Bertone. Bianchi bicycles.
Bianchi.
Yeah. Okay. Brembo brakes, Mike. Had you ever associated that with Italian?
I hadn't until now.
No, you see.
Thanks, Tony.
I will force this to be interesting. Campagnolo bicycles.
Campagnolo. Yes. And it's also, as you know, the version of a 600, yeah?
I did know the words. So that's probably where I knew it from.
An estate, sort of minivan estate, stroke estate version, like a Countryman.
Oh, yes.
That's Campagnola, because Campagna means countryside.
Okay, fine. Dell'Orto carburettors.
Yep.
De Tommaso.
Yeah, come on. De Tommaso.
Itel design, Lamborghini.
Yeah.
Lancia, Maserati, Moto Guzzi, Piaggio. I've got a 50cc Piaggio, so we can be friends. VM Motori, who made all the diesels for Range Rover products and Land Rover products and Rover products.
I'm not thinking of all the, fashion houses.
Totally. But I said that wasn't going to surprise you, Angie, but does that not surprise you, Mike?
Pirelli surprises me because I had assumed they were French.
Really?
Yes. I'm not frightened to admit my own stupidities. Yeah. I've never claimed to know anything, really. I mean, I wing it throughout my entire life.
Me
trying
too.
Not to look surprised when people educate me in certain things.
Anyway, where's the future, Angie? Where's the future for you? Where's the future for
the future is a beautiful quadrifoglio, Giulia. I think, unfortunately, the future is E. Mm-hmm. Which is
electric cars, yes. Hydrogen, maybe.
Yeah, but whatever it is, you must have seen the latest coverage of Ferrari wanting to put speakers in the car to reproduce the noise of the engine. How sad.
Yeah, pointless. Yeah. Pointless. Yeah.
Well, you say pointless. No, hang on. There's a transit van near me.
No, pointless.
A brand new transit van, and it's got a great big speaker underneath, and it's mapped to the to the ECU. Right. And it's a V8. It's not, of course. It's a TDCi 2-litre diesel. And this transit, every time I say to my wife, I say, "And the transit's coming," because it sounds like Mustang, and it's just burbling along. So
if you want a V8 noise, buy a V8.
You can't buy a V8 transit though.
Go and buy it. Yes, we make one. Don't I would rather walk than drive a car with a V8 noise that doesn't have a V8.
Buy a Tatra. There is Tatra.
Yeah.
There is one for sale on Karen Classics at the moment. Mm-hmm. Very, very good looking car. Well, quirky rather than good.
Is it one of the late ones or one of the early ones?
It's the Series 2. So 6032.
6032, okay.
Yes. The split rear window.
It's a little older than me, but, you know, still very old.
They're brilliant cars, 2.5 V8 in the back, interesting handling, but a fabulous car.
It's not somebody else's engine. They made the engine as well.
Yeah.
What an amazing waste of opportunity. I mean, they could have exported it.
So, two car choices. Your favourite car of all time that's Italian and that's non-Italian. What would you have in the dream garage?
Giulietta Sprint Veloce.
Okay. What year or what 69. Era?
69.
Really? Okay.
And the least?
And the non-Italian.
The non-Italian but still favourite?
Yes.
Unfortunately, it's got to be the E-Type, yes.
Most hated car?
Yes.
The one that's got no appeal whatsoever?
Audis.
Just that the whole lot?
The whole lot.
Oh, they've got great
because
curve
even
appeal.
BMWs, I love the i1, the i8. Mm-hmm. Like all the 7 and 8 series BMWs, the old ones, and the Z4. So there are some BMWs I like, but Audi, can't think of a single one, not even the e-tron.
Quattro, the old Quattro from the 80s.
Yeah, no? Bye.
See, I mean, I don't think Audi made a nice car after the Quattro. From the 90s onwards, they don't do it for me, but that's largely image. I mean, they did that, Tony will tell me what it was, that had the Porsche engineering on it.
924.
No, the Audi. Audi Estate. Porsche wheels, Porsche tuned suspension.
Why are you asking?
Because I don't do modern cars.
Do you do modern cars, Tony? A lot?
No.
Is he asking you because you like Audis?
No, I don't particularly. I think they've got great curb appeal. You go to the go to an Audi dealer and they look lovely.
Mm.
You know, they look
and they're dead in the middle.
Yes. Well, my complaint with all VAG products, certainly of the sort of 90s and noughties vintage, is that they all drive like planks. You know, the throttle response is appalling. Everything happens in the first 2.5 millimetres, and then the rest of the pedal is pointless. So you end up jerking around, you know, and you think, cool, this thing will go well, and then you press the accelerator and nothing happens. So that and the engine hanging out over the front does make them feel very ploughy. You know,
is that why they're always like half an inch behind the car in front? Because they're so desperate to keep up momentum. It's like an aerodynamic thing. And they keep flashing the lights because that's just sort of something electrical going wrong.
So last question from me. So when I said what's the future, you answered it nicely with electric. It wasn't quite what I meant with the question. What I meant was for you and AVPR. PR and what you do.
I am still heavily biased towards classic cars at the moment, but I've been doing this for a very, very, very long time. And I have been, let's not talk about cars for a minute. Let's talk about the function itself. Basically, I have been selling dreams for the last 25 years. I sell you a desire. Whether it is, maybe my audience is not the final customer, the consumer, but even if it is the press then eventually talks to the consumer. Mm-hmm. And my brief has always been, you know, I got a postgraduate degree in PR, and it's always been, you don't lie, you might be able to spin a couple of things. Mm-hmm. And we all know that. But I've been doing this for a long time. And I'll tell you what I would really like to get my teeth into. Something a little bit more operational. Something that has a direct correlation between what I do and the result. Which is not, I talk to you and I convince you that this is an extremely interesting car. You write about it. I see the coverage. Thank you. What is it? Something bang, thank you, ma'am. Some sort of, I can't remember.
Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am.
That's the one. Yeah. I would like to do something more practical. That means that whatever I do, the time I invest in something results in somebody else getting a better life, a better deal, a better something. Directly. That's what I would like. So I have been looking at specifically the charger network in the UK.
Okay.
All yeah. right.
Because that's an interesting one. Because I like trouble. I like problems. I like to solve problems.
Well, you've gone to the right place there then.
Well, in that I'm not very feminine because women tend to say, oh dear, have a cup of tea. Yes, I know, he's a bastard. You know, that kind of thing. I don't do that. I say, right, he's done this. You need to kill him and bury the body. Yeah, that's my attitude in life. I don't do pat on the hand and things will get better tomorrow. Things don't get better tomorrow unless you do something about it. Mm-hmm. So the charger network or the fact that so many people run out of charge, that's what I would like. It's an industry, a very interesting one, and especially because there is a problem there and a solution is needed. So I'm talking to a specific company at the moment who is probably the only company that provides rescue for drivers who run out of charge. It's still a very small company, and it is interesting that sometimes they help the bigger, the mammoth, the Leviathan kind of companies, rescue services. I don't want to name any.
No.
But they, what I like is that they have diversified. They started by helping people misfueled. And then once, you know, this enormous intake of electric vehicles and not the infrastructure is not there to cope, they diversified into rescuing those who run out of charge. Mm-hmm. That is something that interests me.
Please tell me they go around with one of those 1980s generators on the back.
They can charge your vehicle up 20 miles.
Yeah, it's as crude as that, isn't it?
Anything else.
Yeah. Because that's the only solution. I mean, you know, you can...
For electric cars, you can't really tow them because the wheels can't touch the floor.
Yeah.
So...
That's assuming they haven't burst into flames by then.
But isn't that the case with the petrol cars as well? Like Lamborghini?
No, they don't tend to burn for 3 days, though, do they? A petrol car.
It's always the case in films. I know that, but
true.
Yeah, exactly. It's like an episode of the A-Team owning an electric car. A little dink, bang. 72 hours later, they're still trying to put it out. It's like the Great Fire of London.
The A-Team, indeed. That's Car Chum for you. Huge thanks to Angie for joining us. And while she doesn't know it yet and certainly hasn't signed the contract, we look forward to welcoming her back on Car Chum again for our intermediate Italian class. And if you're in the mood for learning, the internet is a great place to start. Just avoid the Car Chum social pages of Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. Just search for everything except Car Chum. As ever, thanks for listening, and until next time, pip pip.